Right, it's the evening before the walk, and I've been invited into Coleridge's cottage. So here goes. Good evening, Mr. Walsh.
Good evening, Mr. Pearson.
How are you?
Do come in.
Thank you.
Well, shall we start off in the welcome parlour here? This was the parlour of the original cottage, which dates back to about 1640, 1650, thereabouts. But this was the parlour that Coleridge and his family would have known when they arrived here on 31st of December, New Year's Eve in 1796. And it's how we're setting up at the moment. In fact, January 1797. As you can see, the family's not long moved in. Still got their unpacking to do. And for the time being, they're using this as their storage ground. And they do get a lodger, moves in February 1797. But this becomes his bed-sitting room. But for the time being, this is a good place for them to just leave their stuff. And as you can see, we've got the maid's got a fire going in the grate for them. It's a quite cold time of year. She's used the watchman, in this case, newspaper, to get the fire lit. Nothing particularly remarkable. One wouldn't have thought about that, except that the watchman was Coleridge's own newspaper that he had published in 1796. To no great success, it has to be said. They had several unsold copies left over when they arrived here. And the maid, bless her soul, thought, well, you know, want to get a fire lit? Found some newspapers lying around, what its use is for, which I'm afraid upset dear SCC when he found out that she was using his precious newspaper to light the fires, and she was forbidden to ever do so again.
Right.
Anyway, we're now in the kitchen, Sarah's kitchen. We call it Sarah's kitchen because this room actually started off life as a scullery. They called it a service room. It was a place where all the dirty work was carried out. They did their washing here, as you can see. It's drying and dripping nicely into the bucket there. But, you know, I don't know if you like a stew in or anything.
Oh, yes,
like a
stew, yes,
and
yes.
You're fond of a curry?
curry.
Like a curry. 18th century curry. Many people find that rather surprising, but in fact, it shouldn't be really. You think of the amount of trade that was done with the East Indies and all the sort of spice producing nations, much of it coming through the port of Bristol. And of course, Sarah Coleridge's family was from Bristol.
Right.
Of course, they had many connections there. And of course, spices would have been relatively easy for them to come by. Right, so we'll go through now into what is now the parlour, and much lighter room now than it used to be when the Coleridges lived here. Here's the sort of centrepiece of the room is the fireplace. A little smaller now than it used to be when they were here. You can see the window in the corner. That was a Victorian addition when the house was converted into an inn in about 1870. This fireplace in particular has importance for lovers of Coleridge poetry. Although he wrote the best of his poetry, I believe, in the 3 years in which he lived in this cottage, not all of it was necessarily actually written in the cottage itself. One poem, however, we're fairly certain was written and in this room, and that's Frost at Midnight. And if you can picture this room at night with just, maybe he had a candlelight going, more likely just the light of the fire itself glowing there. He's sitting there in that chair by the fireplace. Next to him in the crib is his baby, Hartley. And he's pondering on life. Everyone else has gone to bed, and he sits down there and writes Frost at Midnight. Now, mind your head as you come up the stairs now. And we are here in the bedroom, and it's pretty much as a bedroom would have appeared in his day. You can see it's set up to imagine someone's just got out of it, or as at this time of the day, perhaps they just pulled it back preparatory to getting into it.
Yes.
All the usual paraphernalia, the pot underneath the chair there. Didn't have such things as Labrador. They did have a loo, but of course it was out in the garden and didn't want to be going that far at night. But we see here on the end of the bed, you've got a dress. There is a story here which reminds us actually of the times that Dorothy Wordsworth used to visit with William Wordsworth. And they used to be just to really go out walking in the hills with Coleridge, leaving Sarah behind. Dorothy Wordsworth was somewhat dismissive, really, of Sarah in many respects. And on at least one known occasion, she just borrowed one of Sarah's dresses to go walking in the hills without asking her, brought it back at the end of the day, covered in mud all over the bottom, and just gave it back to her again. This now is the what we call the exhibition room, but this is where all the material original to the Coleridge's is kept, and there's some sort of quite sort of precious items up here under glass for Coleridge enthusiasts. A couple of things I'd sort of particularly point out. One of my favourites is the pictures on the wall here of Coleridge, portrait there of him in his early 20s, and next to it in his early 30s. I think what's interesting there, though, is in the difference of 10 years. I think they say every picture tells a story, but to me, a man of early 20s there, around about the time that he moved here, fresh face, and I think you would agree, yes, probably full of hope and all his future, a face which is alive and vibrant and hopeful and expectant. And then, 10 years on, I really don't think you could say that about that picture there. That almost has a look of despair about it. And then 10 years on again, man of 42, I think, to be honest, you could probably have forgiven him for saying he was probably nearer 52 looking at, yes, that than 42. This is our reading room, but also you see three sets of headphones there. And this is where poetry is being read. And we've got one set with Coleridge poetry being read, another with contemporaries of his, and another set with modern poetry, which owes its influences to Coleridge. And I'd like to encourage people to listen to this, because a lot of people are put off by poetry. They find it, I don't know, too elitist or difficult to understand. If you hear it being read by someone who understands the poem, then it suddenly acquires all this meaning which you wouldn't necessarily pick up yourself. And here we're very fortunate in that we have Tom Mowbray, who has done the recordings for us here. And he not only understands Coleridge and Coleridge's poetry, but he's got a wonderful speaking voice as well.
But perhaps no poem is more associated with the cottage than Frost at Midnight. The poem is a meditation on Coleridge's own childhood and a passionate expression of hope for his son Hartley's future. It's set in the parlour of the cottage, where Coleridge sits by the low-burnt parlour fire and Hartley, his cradled infant, sleeps beside him. This lime tree bower, my prison, by Samuel Taylor Coleridge. Well, they are gone, and here must I remain. This lime tree bower, my prison. I have lost beauties and feelings such as would have been most sweet to my remembrance, even when age had dimmed mine eyes to blindness. They, meanwhile, friends whom I never more may meet again on springy heath along the hilltop edge, wander in gladness and wind down perchance to that still roaring dell of which I told.
Very briefly, quick look in the room across the way. Here we are. It's our interpretation room. You know, here we can see the influence that Coleridge had on not just other poets, but
Iron Maiden.
Indeed, yes, but you know, other genres as well. I remember from my days in the 1960s a top 10 song called Xanadu by Dave D. Dozy Beaky McIntitch.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.